Good morning, members. I am going to, under Rule 10.01, which deals with remote hearings, I'm going to call the April 8th Taxes Committee to order. And good morning, everyone. And before we start, just a couple guidelines. Is that
this call
the
is
default,
being recorded.
The default is set at muted. So if you want to unmute yourself, you have to press the star key twice. And also to be recognized for a question or for a comment, whatever that might be, you need to text the committee administrator. And that number has been already provided to you, so you might want to look at that right now and find out what that is. Once you text the committee administrator, Mr. Jessen, your name will be put in the queue. And then what I will do is recognize you, and then you'll be unmuted and so forth. So we will be taking our time. You know, we're going to kind of slow things down, give everyone a chance to text in, and all those type of things. And so there will be three times for sure when we will vote or at least recognize ourselves, and that will be when we have the roll call, which we'll do in just a few seconds here, when we approve the minutes, and then when we vote on the DE2 amendment to House File 2693. And so just make sure you recognize yourself, so we've got this for record. This will be, of course, kept for historical purposes and that. And all these remote meetings are recorded and live streamed by the House Public Information Services. So I think that is kind of some of the guidelines for this. And so at this time, what I am going to do is ask Ms. Griska to take the roll, and she will call each member off, and I think we'll all be unmuted at this time. So one thing to remember is that when you are speaking, take your phones off speakerphone, and also when we're in times of voting and like the roll call, and we're unmuted, make sure that there isn't any background noise if possible. So appreciate everyone's cooperation on that. And so, Ms. Griska, if you would please take the roll.
Sorry, I just disconnected myself. Okay, roll call. Chair
yes,
Marquardt.
Please. Present.
Representative Liz Lagarde.
Present.
Representative Davis.
Present.
Representative Becker Finn.
Present.
Representative Brand.
I am here.
Representative Carlson A.
Present.
Representative Carlson L.
Present.
Representative Erickson. Representative Fabian.
Present.
Representative Gomez.
Present.
Representative Lesh.
Present.
Representative Lean.
Present.
Representative McDonald.
Present.
Representative O'Neill.
Present.
Representative Petersburg.
Present.
Representative Schumacher.
Present.
Representative Schultz.
Present.
Representative Swiedzinski.
Present.
Representative Zhang.
Present.
Representative Joachim.
Present.
Majority is present.
So we
you
have a
muted.
Four.
To unmute yourself, press the star key twice.
So the next order of business is approval of the minutes. And Representative Leslie Gard moves approval of the March 12, 2020 minutes. Is there any discussion? So I will give time for anyone to text in to the CA if they have any comments.
Yeah, I know. I'm talking to him.
So
he's running right now.
You have to mute Representative McDonald, or that might be you might have to mute your phone at this point.
Yeah, sorry. Here we go.
All right. Thank you. And then, so any discussion? I'll wait just a minute here if anyone has any discussion on approval of the minutes. I am not seeing anyone who wants to discuss the minutes, so we are going to move to the vote of the approval of the minutes. And if the Legislative Committee Administrator would take the roll.
Chair Marquardt.
Aye.
Representative Liz Lagard.
Aye.
Representative Davis.
Aye.
Representative Becker Finn.
Aye.
Representative Brand.
Aye.
Representative Carlson A.
Aye.
Representative Carlson L.
Aye.
Representative Erickson.
Aye.
Representative Fabian.
Aye.
Representative Gomez.
Aye.
Representative Lesh.
Aye.
Representative Lean.
Aye.
Representative McDonald.
Aye.
Representative O'Neill.
Aye.
Representative Petersburg.
Aye.
Representative Schumacher.
Aye.
Representative Schultz.
Aye.
Representative Swedzinski.
Aye.
Representative Zhang.
Aye.
Representative Joachim.
Aye.
You have been muted. To unmute yourself, press the star key twice.
The minutes are approved.
With that vote, the minutes of March 12, 2020 have been approved. Thank you, members. We're going to move to next on the agenda. So I'd like to ask Mr. Klayman to give a kind of a brief overview of the Federal CARE Act and the state tax implications. So this is just an overview for members just to get a little idea of what that federal bill did comprise of. So, Mr. Klayman.
Sure, Mr. Chair and members, I hope everyone can hear me. A little over a week ago, Congress passed their latest response to the COVID-19 epidemic, and it was called the CARES Act. The CARES Act included a number of tax provisions. Some of those tax provisions raised questions for the state about whether the legislature wants to conform to some of those provisions because they affect FAGI or FTI, and that's the starting point for Minnesota tax. So it's another option here that the state has about conforming to those changes in the federal tax base. There are both individual provisions and business provisions. As I said before, not every tax provision in there is one that the state needs to worry about if it doesn't affect the FAGI or FTI. So I won't spend too much time going through those provisions, but I will discuss those that that do affect the state. So I guess just starting with the individual provisions, the first one is qualified disaster distribution provision. This is very similar to the qualified disaster distribution provision that the committee heard already once this year. In the conformity bill, that was heard a month and a half ago. And essentially, this allows taxpayers who are affected by the epidemic to take up to $100,000 from your retirement account without penalty, without the tax penalty. And then you can repay those amounts over the course of 3 years. So again, very similar to the qualified disaster distribution federal provision that we heard earlier for another obviously disaster area. Next is the there's an above the line charitable contribution deduction, and that's for an amount up to $300. That's something that everybody gets because it's above the line, so everybody can take that even if you're not an itemizer. Next, there is a increase in the suspension of the AGI limitation on the itemized charitable deduction. We think that if we conform, that would flow through to our state itemized deduction, which still retains some reference to the federal code, and that would affect Minnesota tax liability. So that's a change in the charitable contribution limits. The last individual provision that I'll mention is the exclusion for employer payments of student loans. And what this does is it provides an exclusion from gross income for up to $5,250 in employer payments on an employee's student loan. So those are the individual provisions that are relevant to the state. The state tax code, jumping to the business provisions. Essentially what's going on here with a few of these provisions is if members, think back to the TCJA, there were a number of base broadeners that Congress enacted in 2017 as they were trying to balance out the Tax Cut and Jobs Act. And what's going on with the CARES Act for some of these business provisions is that some of those base broadeners are being temporarily and retroactively rolled back. So we don't know exactly what the cost of these provisions is going to be right now. I think the Department of Revenue is still working on it, but there will certainly be costs associated with everything in the CARES Act that affects the state tax base. This could be a more significant cost, although we don't know that for sure yet. So just jumping into the business provisions, the first one is NOLs, net operating losses. There's a lot going on here with the net operating losses. The headline here is that for losses generated in 2018, 19, and 20, the CARES Act allows taxpayers to do a five-year carryback of those losses that were generated in those years. So that means for 2018, you could potentially have taxpayers amending their tax returns back to 2013 to take advantage of that. I think the conventional wisdom here is that this really functions like a stimulus in a lot of ways, that taxpayers can file these amended returns, and they can get an immediate bump in cash, essentially, due to those carrybacks. The other thing that is happening with NOLs is that you remember what the TCJA did for limiting that NOL deduction, they limited it to 80% of taxable income. That's, again, suspended until 2021. And so for those provisions, then taxpayers will have to amend their returns, and they'll be able to take advantage of the retroactive benefit of those changes once they do that. So there's a lot going on with NOL. The next business provision relates to what's often called excess business losses. This was a provision in the TCJA that limited the certain business losses from being used to offset non-business income. And that, again, was a base broadener. The CARES Act retroactively delays the implementation of that limit until 2021. So, again, that would require taxpayers to go back and file an amended return for 18 and 19 to take advantage of that provision. Another TCJA-based broadener that's being modified under the CARES Act is the business interest deduction. This was the provision that limited the business interest deduction that businesses can take to 30% of taxable income. What the CARES Act does is it increases that limit to 50%, but just for tax years 2019 and 2020. And that'll allow a bigger deduction, of course, for that. And then the other piece of the business interest deduction change under the CARES Act is that for tax year 2020, taxpayers can use their 2019 taxable income to calculate their business interest deduction limit. So with more income in 2019, presumably businesses can take a bigger business interest deduction for tax year 2020. Again, presumably, most businesses are going to have significantly reduced taxable income for tax year 2020. And then finally, there is what's often referred to as a technical correction under the CARES Act that affects bonus depreciation. It does have a substantive effect, so I'm kind of wary of calling it a technical fix, but what this provision does is it fixes what's called the retail glitch, and the conventional wisdom here is that there was just a drafting error in the TCJA that prevented certain improvements to real property from qualifying for 100% expensing just due to a missing reference to the recovery period for that particular property. So that's in the CARES Act as well. Again, all of those, that's it for the business provisions that are going to affect the state tax base. And then I guess just briefly, there are a couple other provisions in here that the state doesn't need to worry about. One of those is the headline provision that everyone's been talking about. That's the stimulus payment, quote unquote. That's actually not a taxable benefit. That's it's characterized as a federal tax credit. So that's a piece of that. There's a waiver of required minimum distribution rules as well in the bill. And then there's some other business provisions in the CARES Act, employee retention credit, payroll tax deferral. There's a retroactive corporate AMT credit. Of course, the corporate AMT was repealed, but the TCJA still allowed corporations to retain their AMT credits. And then there's a distilled spirits excise tax for the manufacturer hand sanitizer. Again, for those provisions, the state doesn't really need to worry about those. And Mr. Chair, so that's the tax provisions in the CARES Act in a nutshell. And I can certainly answer any questions that people have about that too if they have more questions.
So, Mr. Clayman, thank you so much for that. And when DOR completes the revenue estimate on this, we'll spend more time on this. And also, Mr. Klayman, could you put together a brief on some of these provisions and get that out to members? If you would, that would be great, too. So, members, this was primarily just kind of a little update on what the federal government did and some of its impacts that we might have, but we'll talk more about this when we get more of a revenue estimate from DOR. Thank you, Mr. Klayman. So we're going to move next to number four, House File 2693, and so I will move, this is Chair Marquardt, I will move House File 2693, and then with that, I am going to move the DE2 amendment, and all members should have that. And what I think I'll do is we'll talk about the amendments, we'll listen to testifiers' questions, and we'll vote at the end on the DE2 amendment. But this is the one area that may be possible for the April 14th House floor session. We're still waiting to hear from the Senate Republicans on this provision, so we have not heard back from them on whether or not there would be a thumbs up or a thumbs down, so I wanted to mention that. Here's what the DE2 amendment does. So under current law, the Department of Revenue is mandated to post a public listing of taxpayers who are delinquent in paying certain types of taxes, sales and use tax, corporate tax, some other taxes. And when that posting happens, a liquor manufacturer or wholesaler is prohibited from delivering or selling any alcoholic beverages to that business or taxpayer. So right now under current law, the DOR is mandated to post that. So what this amendment would say is that the DOR does not have to post it if a business is impacted by these the governor's executive orders. For example, we know Executive Order 20-04, which began on March 17th, said that, you know, restaurants, bars, taverns, those would be the ones mostly affected, but it also affected theaters, museums, fitness centers, amusement parks, bowling alleys, that they were, you know, closed to occupancy by members of the public. So any business that's impacted by these executive orders, there the Department of Revenue, the commissioner, would not have to post. And we certainly know the very difficult financial times that these businesses are going through right now. So this provides the DOR flexibility in doing that. Then also the effective date is after the effective date would be after January 31st of 2020 until after 4 months that these executive orders go out, so expire, I should say. So that is what the amendment did. And so if you've got questions right now, I guess we can take those of me or Mr. Klayman. But basically that's the amendment. And then I guess, members, we could we could vote on this right now and then, come back. But I see Representative McDonald has a question. So, Representative McDonald. And then hit the star button twice to unmute yourself.
Okay. The old saying goes, can you hear me now?
I can.
So the question, Mr. Chair, is when we pass this on the 14th, hopefully, is it retroactive for any businesses that perhaps were delinquent or on the list, if there should be at all, or if there was, is it retroactive if necessary? Can it be? Is the question.
Yeah. Well, yes. Well, Representative McDonald and Mr. Klayman can correct me if I'm wrong, but it would be for any taxes due after January 31st of 2020, it looks like, is when this would go into effect. So the postings would deal with any, I think, taxes after that. And if Mr. Klayman would like to chime in here, you certainly could.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
That's correct. Yep, that's correct. So any taxes that were due after January 31st of 2020, those would be included in this provision. So it would be retroactive to that date.
Very good.
Okay, very good.
Representative,
very good, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
One more question, Mr. Chair.
Oh, I'm sorry, Representative McDonald.
Yeah, just wondering, I see the testimony email from Jennifer Schoenzeit from Zip Lippers, MLBA president. Is she going to testify, or is we just have her written document?
Nope, she plans to testify.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Fabian is next on the list.
Here I am. Okay, this is Fabian here. And just to be clear, this is only, Mr. Chair, this is only for liquor business type businesses. It doesn't impact any other businesses, or am I reading the bill wrong?
Mr. Klayman, I'm going to ask Mr. Klayman just to go straight to him on this.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, this is only relevant to business that has an on-sale license where they're buying and selling, beer, wine, and spirits. So this is just relevant to the liquor businesses. And,
okay.
And
Representative Fabian?
I don't think Mr. Klayman was finished. I'll let him finish.
Okay. Mr. Klayman?
Yeah, I mean, there's really not much more to say. The reason why this is just relevant to the liquor businesses is because the consequence of the consequence of being delinquent in filing or payment of those certain taxes is that it's unlawful then for a wholesaler or a manufacturer to actually sell or make deliveries to that on sale licensee. So it's only relevant to those establishments that are in the liquor business. And these would be on-sale establishments, too, because those would be the places of public accommodation that were closed under the executive order.
Representative Fabian, a follow-up?
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm curious to hear from the Department of Revenue. Is Mr. Niemann going to testify?
That's the intent.
Okay, because Mr. Chair, thank you. Here's my question then that I hope that they would address in their testimony. In this, we are giving them discretion to not post these individual businesses. Okay? So I'm cautiously optimistic, but when we're giving them the discretion to either post or not post, what are the guardrails on there? Shouldn't all businesses just be required to, or excuse me, shouldn't revenue just be required to not post these businesses through the duration of the timeline that's in the bill? Or explain to me why we're giving them, quote, the discretion. And you said when you introduced the bill that the Department of Revenue, quote, does not have to post. That could cause some problems for some businesses.
Representative Fabian, great question. I think that should be addressed to the Department of Revenue, because remember, any bills that go up, the rules are right now that any bills that we're going to hear on April 14th have to have approval from all five parties to be. So that's a question for the DOR. Follow-up, Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Klayman, I'm sure he's still listening in, and others, if they're concerned, if we need to somehow change the language in the bill, I would be open to that. But obviously, Mr. Chair, that would be up to you. I just want to make sure that everyone's given a fair shake. And I'm not suggesting that the Department of Revenue is not fair, but it leaves some room for problems, possibly. So we may be able to tighten it up if your claimant thinks it's necessary and other people who are smarter than I am.
Oh, well, yes, I appreciate that. Yes, thank you, Representative Fabian. Chair Davis.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. And maybe this is for Mr. Klayman. I've worked with postings and tried to help folks out for years on this issue. Postings are for those bars or restaurants that are in great financial difficulty. The governor's orders are going to be putting these people totally out of business. They're wiped out. They're gone. So if they're going to have a posting, they're in pretty bad shape now. And with the governor's orders, they've been wiped out. They're out of business. They won't reopen. So isn't the question, why are we doing this? Because if we're delaying postings, I mean, don't we want to see all the folks that are going bankrupt? Or, Mr. Klayman, how does this work? Do you understand what I'm saying? If you're doing a posting, you're in bad shape. The governor's orders are wiping these people out, period. So what's the point of postings?
Mr. Klayman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Davids, I think I'll just comment that, you know, if a business survives the downturn and they come back, you know, they would have a few months after the expiration of the lifting of the executive order to make good on those delinquencies. It would be, you know, 4 months from the lifting of the executive order. As far as, you know, what happens with these tax debts in bankruptcy, you know, I'm not sure. I'd have to look into that. But.
Chair David, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Klayman, I guess the point is, for postings, you've got financial problems. The governor's order shut these businesses down, period. So I don't understand why this is needed, because anybody that's in a posting is not going to be reopening. So I don't really, you know, understand the point of delaying postings. Well, delay them. You can delay them all you want because they're not in business anymore. Thanks, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Petersburg.
Can you hear me now?
Representative Petersburg, we can hear you.
Okay, so the question that I have is in regards to, are there any taxpayers currently that are posted that would have followed within this limitation as well? You know, because if they were 10 days late a couple weeks ago, they would have been posted, yet this provides them the opportunity to be exempted from that. And the under the no obligation question becomes, well, they still could be posted. So, you know, again, as Chair David said, you know, what's the purpose of this particular piece? How many people is it actually going to help? How many of it is just going to extend the difficulties that they're having? So the question is really about how many people have already been posted that otherwise under this particular bill would have not been posted.
Yeah, and then Representative Petersburg, maybe that's a question for the Department of Revenue. I don't know, and I don't know if Mr. Klayman would know that answer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Petersburg, yeah, I'd have to defer to the Department of Revenue on that. They'd have, they would know, you know, the status of all the liquor postings that currently exist for tax purposes. So I'd defer to them.
All right. I sure will ask the question then. Thank you.
Yeah, Ben, you know, I think this bill and this amendment is another approach to try to create some flexibility to try to keep businesses and, in other cases, individuals afloat during this unheard-of emergency. and hopefully get them to the point where we can then go into the recovery phase and get them back on their feet. So, I mean, there's been a number of things done and things that we've taken to the House floor on bipartisan, bicameral agreements that have, you know, trying to get people kind of across the bridge here over this time and get them into a recovery mode. So this is kind of one of those things. But I think the Department of Revenue can probably address some of these questions. Representative Petersburg, any follow-up?
No, that's good. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just want to thank you for bringing forward this bill, too. I think you, with your last comments, really nailed it that on-sale restaurants and bars right now may have been doing just fine before this hit with the closure. Now they're starting to have to delay payments on things, and when they reopen, we'd hate to have these delayed payments then be posted on taxes so that they could not purchase liquor to then help with their rebound sales. So thank you for bringing this forward. One quick question, how does this apply to businesses that have both an on-sale and an off-sale license?
Mr. Clayman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Joaquin, that's a good question. I think that what would happen if you're posted, you just can't get any delivery. So if you have, if you're like, you've got a combination license, an on or off sale combination license, you wouldn't be able to accept delivery. So, what this would do is for the, businesses that are still open that have a combination license, or you could even have like a brew pub or something, or a small brewery that has an off-sale license, and then they also do some on-sale. If they're still operating, this would, potentially allow those, on and off-sale licensees to, not be posted if the commissioner, her discretion, decides not to post them. So I suppose this could keep those licensees, still operating right now if they were posted.
So, Mr. Chair, follow-up?
Joaquin, go ahead.
So this could really help some of our maybe municipal liquor stores that have both off and on sale to keep them afloat.
Mr. Clayman, can you answer that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Joaquin, I'd have to look to see how this is going to apply to the munis. If you have a licensee that does both on and off sale, and they are currently delinquent and filing or paying any of those taxes, they could be lifted and or that posting could be removed, and they could then begin to accept deliveries again. So with the municipal liquor stores, I don't know enough about what the tax structure is like for them, but in general, I think that's basically correct.
Representative Joaquin?
Thank you.
All right, thank you. We have two testifiers. We're going to move to them right now. No further questions here. So we have the Department of Revenue. Justin Nyman, are you on the line?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chair.
All right. Please state your name and please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Justin Nyman, and I'm an assistant commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Revenue. I appreciate the opportunity to testify before you today. The proposal that we're discussing this morning suspends the requirement for the commissioner to liquor post businesses with an active liquor license that do not timely file and pay certain taxes. Under current law, Minnesota Statutes 270C.725, the commissioner is required to publicly list the name and location of businesses with a liquor license that do not file and pay certain taxes. This information is required to be posted once a business is 10 days delinquent in filing and paying taxes and remains in effect until the business has paid in full. Businesses that are liquor posted cannot purchase or receive delivery of liquor or resale in their establishments. This has been an effective tool to encourage compliance. As a result of the department's use of its authority to grant a 30-day grace period for sales and use taxes or other considerations that may be granted, the statute will require the department to post businesses that take advantage of the grace period and therefore do not pay their taxes by the regular due date. Under the statute, they are technically delinquent because they have not paid their sales taxes by the due date required by the statute. Without this legislation, the department will be required to post these businesses by May 15th and must notify each business of the liquor posting by May 5th, 2020. We believe that this is an unintended consequence of providing the 30-day relief to taxpayers. Posting a business under these circumstances may cause confusion to the taxpayer and to the public. The liquor posting language will allow the commissioner to refrain from posting businesses that are identified by the COVID-19-related emergency executive orders closing public accommodations. I'd like to take a minute and just answer a few of the questions that came up. I just want to be clear that, you know, the Department of Revenue is the one that is asking for this bill so that we can we're not required to post. And this is for new debt that is after 1/31/2020. So the way the law is written is previous debt to 1/31/20 would remain and still be subject to liquor posting. With that, thank you for the opportunity to provide information about this language. I'm on the call with other representatives from Revenue, and we are here to answer your questions. So thank you.
Thank you. We have Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for the Deputy Commissioner. So how many businesses are currently posted, and how does that compare to a year ago?
Mr. Neiman?
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Neill, I don't have that information right in front of me. I'd be happy to pull that information and provide it to the committee.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I think it's incredibly important to our conversation this morning. I think we need to know, just as former Chair Davids was talking about, you know, we have, especially in these rural communities, a decimation of our businesses, and we certainly would like more information as to how many are currently posted and how does that compare to the past. Maybe one of the other folks that are on the line from DOR could provide that information, or I would hope that you would be prepared to answer that if we're bringing something forward that says you no longer have to post that list. It would be nice to know what is that list. I'll go back and see if you've got anyone there has an answer. Thank you.
Okay, very good. So, Mr. Neiman, does anyone have an answer from the department on this question?
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Neill, I'm going to defer to Joanna Bayers, our legislative director, on this.
Ms. Bayers?
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Neill, currently we have 160 businesses that are posted, but none has been posted since the executive order. So when the executive order went into effect, it was we did the grace period on the sales tax on a February month that was due in March. And so those businesses that would have those businesses, if they were late on the February tax, it wouldn't be posted until May. So any businesses affected at this time have not been posted.
Thank you. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, so kind of a baseline might be 160, I think is what I heard you say. Do you have any kind of information as to, you know, as of right now, how many would be posted in May?
Ms. Bayers?
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Neill, it was about 35 that would be potentially be posted at this time.
Representative O'Neill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So is that in addition to the 60 that you had from February on top of that, or is that we're starting a whole new list? Can you just help me understand what the difference is between 160 and now the 35?
Ms. Spears.
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Neill, each month when they get listed, if the business pays in full, they are actually removed from the list. So the 160 are businesses that have kind of, you know, they may have debt since December, November. And so as soon as that's paid, they get removed. So 35 is about the number that would be added to the list. So new businesses added.
Representative O'Neill, and let's try to finish up on this. You've got 12 minutes left, and then someone else needs the line. So further questions, Representative O'Neill?
I do not. That was the end of it.
Okay.
I just wanted to get to the answer.
Yeah, thank you very much. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. I guess the question you kind of answered, but my question here is, what of those that generally get posted, how many actually get back into business, or do they just stay posted and then stay out of business? Do we have any kind of running figure on that?
Ms. Bears or Mr. Neiman?
Mr. Chair, Representative Petersburg, this tool is very effective, and so a lot of the times, most of the businesses are paying. Is probably, I don't have the exact number, but I would say the 160 are people that have probably have already gone out of business already. Most people pay within the first 30 days of being posted, and so that they are removed from posting. It's a very small few that don't pay and may be on there for a couple of months, but most of them do pay.
Well, thank you. And,
Representative,
and I would just say, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would just say that this is a special circumstances, and we certainly want them to be able to get their liquor purchases done so they can build up, but we are putting them in a precarious situation where they may not be recovered. So as to Chair David's point earlier, I will concede that as well. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Very good. Thank you. See no more questions on it. We're going to move to the next testifier, Jennifer Schoenseit of Minnesota Licensed Beverage Association. Please proceed and please announce yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm Jennifer Schoenseit of Zips Liquor in Minneapolis. It's an independent family-run store in Minneapolis, second generation. I have 28 employees. I am also the current president of the Minnesota Liquor and Beverage Association, which has members of small independent bars, restaurants, and liquor stores. The MLBA supports this provision in the bill regarding liquor posting flexibility. Here's what liquor posting is. Before COVID-19 and current Minnesota Department of Safety and Alcohol and Gaming Enforcement Division issued a monthly list of alcohol license holders like bars, restaurants, and liquor stores who had not paid their local sales tax and other alcohol. If retailers on the list, wholesalers were not allowed to sell to them. What this provision is in the bill gives flexibility to the Department of Public Safety on posting its list, allowing them to choose or delay businesses can get back on their feet faster. And when emergency executive orders are lifted, the bars and restaurants, which the government closed, could be given an additional 4 months to repay their taxes and invoices to the state. This simply delays payment, not waives taxes. There also needs to be an additional sentence added to this amendment. An invoice to distributors, because that's the second reason posting happens, and retailers need the flexibility to get back on their feet faster. Distributors can post post unpaid past invoices because of the closure of COVID-19 and the shutdown of their establishments. The economic impact on the hospitality industry in Minnesota economics cannot be overstated. Over 330,000 Minnesotan jobs are in retail, small, independent, family-owned businesses without substantial cash reserves. Throughout, no fault of their own, on-premise retailers have been required to close by the government action, and furthermore have been required by the government action to provide sick pay and unemployment compensation benefits for their employees. It is established anyway that 25 to 40% of these businesses will fail. These retail operations are being closed for unknown amount of time. Their sales and revenues are abruptly stopped, while at the same time ongoing costs by national commitments push their businesses even farther into deeper bankruptcy. This is one small but important step the legislature can do to help bars and restaurants get back on their feet. Other fixes the committee could do to include adjusting June accelerated taxes and consider bars and restaurants to sell limited quantities of beer and wine with takeout food. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members.
Well, thank you so much for your testimony. And we have a question, Representative McDonald.
Actually,
go ahead, Representative.
Chair Marquardt, I don't have a question. It's more of a comment, so I can wait until that's part of the meeting.
That sounds good. Very good. Well, I see no further questions. We've had testifiers, and so we're going to take a vote on. We're going to take a vote on the amendment, the DE2 amendment. If there's any other questions or comments. And so before we do that, of course, you know, if we don't pass this, the Department of Revenue is required. They're mandated. They have to post this. And as you just heard, this is one way in which you can kind of help bars and restaurants get back on their feet. It's in effect until after 4 months after the emergency order is lifted or expires. So that gives some time also kind of during the recovery where there wouldn't be any posting. So ask members for your support on this. And Ms. Griska, if you could take – oh. Okay, Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have an oral amendment in regards to the testimony that we just heard, because as they said, part of the posting is also invoices, delinquent invoices to distributors. And my suggested oral amendment is on line 1.12 after revenue, delete period, add comma, add or invoices to distributors, period.
So, Representative O'Neill, I don't think this is in our jurisdiction. So, you know, the Commissioner of Revenue doesn't have control or review of any distributed invoices for liquor posting purposes. They are just dealing with the posting. And so, we can certainly check with the Department of Public Safety and the committee, but that's really out of our purview, that amendment. So if you could, I don't think we should be considering that in this committee. That's not in our purview. And maybe the Department of Revenue, Ms. Bears, would want to comment on that.
This language only affects this, Representative O'Neill, this law only affects 270C.725, which doesn't address any type of distributor invoices or any type of things that DPS may do on their side with alcohol regulation. This would only be for tax purposes.
And I think also Representative O'Neill, even though this is outside our jurisdiction, we can, you know, work on things before April 14th.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I bring it for that purpose as well. If it is not in our jurisdiction, maybe it's within Commerce. I also serve on Commerce, too, so we'll probably hear it there.
Okay.
But I'll withdraw my motion then if you feel that it's not in our jurisdiction. And if those members that are still working on this before April 14th could take that into consideration. Thank you.
Yes. Representative O'Neill, I really appreciate that. Thank you so much for withdrawing, and we'll look at that further, certainly, and like I said, I think that would be Public Safety Committee probably. So with that, we're going to take a roll call vote on the DE2 amendment. So Ms. Griska, if you could take the roll, please.
Mute off.
Chair Marquardt?
Aye.
Representative Lislegard?
Aye.
Representative Davids?
Aye.
Representative Becker-Finn?
Aye.
Representative Brand?
Aye.
Representative Carlson A?
Aye.
Representative Carlson L?
Aye.
Representative Erickson?
Aye.
Representative Fabian?
Aye.
Representative Gomez?
Aye.
Representative Lesh?
Aye.
Representative Lean?
Aye.
Representative McDonald?
Aye.
Representative O'Neill?
Aye.
Representative Petersburg?
Aye.
Representative Schumacher? Representative
aye.
Schumacher? Okay. Representative Schultz?
Aye.
Representative Swazinski?
Aye.
Representative Zhang?
Aye.
Representative Joachim?
Aye.
We have 20 ayes, 0 nays.
You have been muted.
Being
to unmute yourself, press the star key.
There being 20 ayes and 0 nays, the motion does prevail and the DE amendment is adopted. Representative McDonald.
Stating the obvious that everybody knows, but it's always good to be stated for our constituents and our businesses and families and friends who own these businesses. The best way to really help them at this point is trying to get open as soon as possible. So I encourage you, Mr. Chair, to continue to speak with our governor, and hopefully at least at the end of the 30 days, the May 1st, that we need to be opened up. I'm sure that I know you believe that in your heart and your mind. So I encourage Mr. Chair to continue to spread that message to our governor.
Very good. Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, of course, I'm supporting the bill as amended, but we really need the department to comment very briefly on the issue of conforming with the feds to go to July 15th. The feds did it for everybody. The state's done it for everyone except those that pay estimates. You're getting probably as many calls as I am from CPAs saying, what in the world are you doing? I just talked to a CPA, three of them yesterday, saying we need to conform with that to the Department of Revenue. Is the department going to take any action on conforming to July 15th?
So, we can, if Ms. Bears wants to comment shortly, we've got about 1 minute. But Ms. Bears, did you want to comment to that at this point?
Mr. Chair, Representative Davis, I'm going to let my Justin Neiman, our Assistant Commissioner, comment, make that comment.
Mr. Neiman.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you. So we understand that there is a lot of questions that are floating around about the estimated payments and the income taxes due coming up here on the 15th. And we're hearing those questions, too. So we just want you all to understand that we are taking it seriously, and we are, as we're moving through this unique time, and it's truly challenging for a number of us, including yourselves and our partners, that we must balance the need for state revenue with providing flexibility to our taxpayers who need it for COVID-19-related situations. And now more than ever, the state and local governments are needed to perform essential services for the state. And we recognize that maintaining it right now is difficult and may present challenges for both our taxpayers and preparers. We are committed to continuing those discussions, and that's all I really have to say about that right now.
Very good. We're down to 1 minute. Chair Davis, anything follow up quickly? please?
Well, I'm very disappointed in that non-answer. We need to know this before April 15th, and we're just pushing the ball down towards disaster again. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. So, you know, members, I'm going to lay over House File 2693 as amended. So, members, thank you so much. I mean, we're here as a state. We're trying to balance things on two fronts, trying to make sure that, number one, we take care of the health and safety of our residents around the state, and second, to also try to take care of our economic and financial health of our individuals and businesses, too. So that's going to be the game plan at this point, and I wish everyone a good rest of the day. Please stay healthy, and members, thank you so much for this, and we will be at the call of the chair for the next meeting. So, members, we are adjourned.